We have a lot of announcements this morning, so I want to get started. The first announcement is that the UU orientation class, which was originally scheduled for today, has been changed, rescheduled to next Sunday on the 5th. So if you're interested in learning more about Unitarian Universalism and Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church in particular, come and attend that orientation. If you're interested, you can see Chris White, I think, or Al. Is that right? Al Haskell. If you have a chance today after today's service, take a look at the new fire pit outside on our grounds. And if you want, stay to help the new benches. So help assemble the new benches, and there is no skill required. So we'll see what those are like to sit on. And then we have a special announcement from music, Nancy, our music director.
Hi, I'm Nancy, your new music director. And I want to tell you about some ways you can be involved in our church and our music. You've probably heard our wonderful intergenerational choir leading us in song the last three Sundays. And we would love new members. You don't have to read music. You don't maybe have never even been in a choir before. Our wonderful director, Michelle Hoyt, will teach you everything you need to know. Anybody from middle school on up. Some we even have a few folks in their 80s. And we rehearse from 6:30 until 7:30 on Wednesday here in the sanctuary in the choir lounge. So I hope you can join us. And for the kids, anyone 4 to 14, our new kid choir kicks off next week with a mini retreat. Join us right after the service in room 1. We'll feed you guys lunch, have some fun and some games, and we'll start singing for our Thanksgiving, and we'll start practicing for singing for our Thanksgiving and Christmas services. The details are in the order of service, too, if you want to look. That's next week on October 5th. And then for everyone, we're celebrating Sukkot on Saturday, October 11th, and our new fire pit that Christy mentioned. We'll decorate our sukkah and eat together and then have a bonfire and sing along. And who knows, we may even sing Hagi Nagila and dance the Hora again. So hope you can join us.
Then we have another announcement from Robert Taylor.
Good morning. I have some good news to share with you. About 2 years ago, our church was the first of roughly 24 churches to join in forming a congregation-based community organization to respond to the increasing number of homeless children and their families that we were seeing in school systems in western Waukesha County. After much work and preparation, Family Promise of western Waukesha County will begin serving families in November. And our turn to welcome families as our guests and hosting for 1 week will be in December, over Christmas. And Gina Magnus, Bill Lustis, Sheila Larkin, and I will be coordinating that effort, and we'll be keeping you up to date and talking with you more about what that will involve. And there is an open house on October 21st at the Family Promise Office and Day Center, which is off of Highway 18 in Wales. October 21st, it's a Tuesday evening, or Tuesday afternoon and evening, 3 o'clock to 8 o'clock. There is also a holiday open house fundraiser next Sunday afternoon, or late afternoon, 5:30 to 7:30, with the Soulfire Art Studio. So if you are interested in finding out more about what we're going to be doing or in these events, please contact me or Bill Lizis or Sheila Larkin or Gina Magnus, and we'd be happy to talk with you. Thanks.
Well, there are many more announcements in the order of service, and of course the newsletter just came out, so if you want to be up to date on everything that's going on, take a look at those announcements and read your newsletter. Our guest speaker today, or we have two guest speakers today, Mark Brewer is an IT manager for John Deere, and he has two children. He has been a member of LCUUC for the last 4 years. Mark is a lover of life and not afraid to try almost anything, and he is a little wounded from one of his...
Trying too many things.
Nice hike at Loudoun Peak. And then Tony Provenzano is a home builder. He has four children, and Tony is a self-proclaimed lover of science and an avid reader. Mark and Tony today are going to discuss how science and technology have helped advance humans thus far, but how in reality we have only just begun. They intend to offer a positive vision of the future, showing ways that a smart and caring use of technology by humans cannot only solve our problems, but create a better world for everyone. For minds in search of truth, unfolding, ever beautiful, ever strange. Here, compassion is our shelter, freedom our protection from the storms of bigotry and hate. In this abode, may we find comfort and courage. Here, may our sight become vision to see the unseen, to glimpse the good that is yet to be. Come, let us worship together. Please take a moment to greet those around you. Say hello, introduce yourself. May the flame we kindle now, like the gentle radiance of daybreak, shining on eyelids clenched against life's hardness, awaken us to a world alive with possibility and hope. Please rise in body or spirit and join together in our opening hymn, number 1018 in the Teal Hymnal, Come and Go With Me. We hope that all visitors, wherever they are on life's journey, on whatever their background, will find a lasting home here. Whether you consider yourself a technophile or a techno-skeptic, somewhere in between or somewhere beyond, we welcome you. Whatever your primary mode of using your creativity to engage the world, we welcome you. Please join us for refreshments and conversation in our social hall after the service. Mark and Tony will be on hand to discuss any thoughts or feedback or questions that you would have after the service today. The artist service again includes announcements, and we look forward to all of our visitors, friends, and members joining in the many activities listed there. Please take a moment at this point in the service to deactivate noise-emitting devices. And again, welcome to everyone here this morning. We are so grateful that you've chosen to celebrate and worship with us. I think I forgot to put the basket out for the food pantry. I'll grab that. So one of the ways we care for a wider community is by contributing to local food pantries, both financially and through the collection of non-perishable food items, which we donate each month. If you have a food item to share, please bring that forward at this point in the service, or ask a child to bring it forward for you, and then I invite the children to come up front or stay up front and enjoy a story. Thank you. today's story, or today's service, is about technology, which has a lot to do with inventions or things that human beings make and create, and things that make our lives maybe better or safer or healthier. And this story is about a girl named Maddie Knight, called Marvelous Maddie. And it's a true story. So Maddie Knight lived in a little house in York, Maine, and this was over 100 years ago, with her widowed mother and older brothers, Charlie and Jim. They were poor, but Maddie didn't feel poor. She had inherited her father's toolbox. When she thought of things that could be made with the tools, she drew them in a notebook labeled My Inventions. Her brothers called her sketches her brainstorms. Maddie made a whirligig for Charlie and a jumping jack for Jim, some toys back then. For her mother, who sat up late on cold nights sewing to earn a living, she made a foot warmer. In spring, Charlie and Jim asked, "Won't you make us a special kite?" And Maddie set to work sketching her ideas. "What's Maddie doing now?" their mother asked. "She's had a brainstorm," the boy said. Their mother shook her head. Maddie was a strange girl, happiest with her pencil and jackknife and hammer. That was pretty unusual over 100 years ago. When Maddie and the boys took the finished kite out to fly, it soared high into the wind. "Yahoo!" they yelled. "Who made that?" some town boy laughed. "Maddie made it." "Ah, she didn't. A girl couldn't make that." In winter, Maddie made sleds for Charlie and Jim, and they won every race. Four town boys asked Maddie to make sleds for them to race. "It'll cost you a quarter apiece," Maddie said. She gave the money to her mother. But their family was still poor. So when Maddie was 11, they moved to Manchester, New Hampshire, where there were factories that made fabric for clothing and blankets. They're called textile mills. So Maddie's brothers and her mother worked in the mill, and Maddie went to school. And while her family was still at work and Maddie had time after school, she used to explore the town. One day she heard a big roar from inside a building. She went inside and saw some men working on a huge iron machine. She opened her sketchbook and started to sketch. "What does a young girl want here?" one of the men asked. "I love machines," Maddie said. "I guess you must," the man said. His name was Mr. Baldwin. "Our machine shop here usually repairs looms for the mill, but we've been asked to manufacture a locomotive." Mr. Baldwin answered all Maddie's questions. She went home and told her family what she had learned. "Whatever can this lead to?" said her mother, sighing. When Maddie was 12, she too went to work at the mill. One day, a shuttle shot off the end of a loom and slammed into a girl's head. I brought a shuttle so you can see what it's like. It holds thread on it, and it goes back and forth. And you can see what would happen if this was going really fast and flew through the air and hit you in the head. Pretty dangerous. "Horrible," someone said. "It was the fault of the machines. But everyone had to keep working while the injured girl was carried out because nothing ever stopped the looms working and the fabric being produced." So after work, Maddie went home and thought about that accident. She thought about the shuttle, what it was supposed to do, and what had gone wrong. She scribbled in her notebook. Suddenly, an idea took shape. A metal guard could stop a shuttle from flying off the track. It was simple, if only she could try it out. Maddie showed her sketch to Mr. Baldwin. "My goodness, these are the drawings of a real inventor," he said. "I'm going to show it to the boss." The head engineer was impressed and showed Maddie's design to the mill owner. A few weeks went by. Then one day, workmen arrived and began installing shuttle guards on all the looms in every mill. The shuttle guards worked just as Maddie had designed them to do. Never again would someone be hurt by a runaway shuttle. "Maddie, I'm so proud of you," her mother said. So Maddie kept working at the mill, and she grew up, and when she was 18, she moved away from home and got a job in a different kind of factory where they made paper bags. Not paper bags like this, though. The paper bags they made in that place were kind of flat like an envelope, and when people tried to put stuff in them, they ripped. So she heard that someone was trying to invent a machine to make better paper bags, ones that could stand up, right, like this, so they were easier to fill, and that would be strong when they were filled with groceries. So she decided to try to invent it herself. She spent long hours after work sketching her ideas. Then she tested her ideas by building a prototype, or like a sample machine, out of wood using the old tools from her dad's work box. It took her many tries, weeks and weeks and weeks, to get the machine to work just the way she wanted. And here she is doing a little dance with her roommate when she finally got it to work just right. She went to a meeting of an inventors club, and the other inventors at the inventors club said, "You should take your design to a machine shop and have them make an iron prototype or a sample, and then you can go to the patent office and get a patent." A patent would allow Maddie to be recognized as the legal owner of the design. So she did that, but when she went to the patent office, the man there, the clerk, said, "Miss, this has already been patented only last week. What could have happened?" It turned out that someone at the machine shop had kind of stolen her design and got the patent ahead of her. So Maddie went to court to prove that she was the true inventor of the bag folding machine to make bags like this. When the judge and the lawyers saw her sketchbook, remember her sketchbook? Full of her ideas and designs and all the tries that she had made, they agreed that was evidence enough to prove that the design was hers. So justice was won, and Maddie got her patent. Instead of selling her design, Maddie went into business for herself and started the Eastern Paper Bag Company. During her life as an inventor, Maddie came up with more than 90 original inventions, and people still use these paper bags from her bag folding machine invention every day. Thanks for listening. I need the lantern bearer to come forward. May the light and love of our chalice lead you today and every day. And then we're going to join in singing the children to their classrooms. The words and music are all on the screen. The words are in the order of service, and Karen will play through it once. And then when we start singing, you can all head out to your classrooms. Here that we might have life and have it more abundantly. so that we might share it with others. Come, let us join together as a generous people. The morning offering will now be given and received. Thanks for these gifts given and received for the work of this community. So now is the time in our service when we share our joys and concerns. We do this in two ways, by speaking them aloud and by lighting candles. If you have a joy or concern to share, please raise your hand. I'm sure we'll bring you a microphone. State your name when you say your joy or concern, and I will light a candle for you.
My name is Claire. As many of you drove in this morning, you probably noticed the driveway is under construction with lots of materials and woodworking. The Eagle Scout group with Parker Gunnison and his family did a really nice job yesterday constructing the fire pit for us so we could use it last night for the overnight. And they're still working on the benches, but they plan on getting done with them today. But I really commend them for the hard work that they've been doing. So it's been great.
I'm Karen. I have a candle of both joy and concern. My concern is that Mary and Raleigh Davidson are leaving, and I'm going to miss them. They've been members here for a number of years now. And I've so enjoyed having them in the choir and being friends. But the joy is that they're off in their RV to who knows where they're going to end up. They're just taking off, so that's great, and I wish them well.
I'm Angel. First, a joy that they're going off in their RV. My parents are seeking that goal as well, and they're very excited about it. secondly, concern, tomorrow is the final court date for the custody issue. My ex has been keeping my children from me. And my hope is that we get to see each other, is number one, that we see each other again. And then secondly, that it comes out in the highest good for all involved. And just prayers and energy for that. The court is tomorrow at 3. I need all the help I can get. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Al, and I have a joy that my father of 86 has a working pacemaker, so that's encouraging. I have a concern, and it kind of piggybacks on Karen's, and that is I want to remind all of us that when folk like Raleigh and Mary go off to their new digs, my concern is that we don't stop them. I've been a member of this church for quite a period of time, and it seems every year we may not lose the caliber of these two, but we lose really great people, their family and so forth. And what do we do about it? We just say we love you and have a great life. I'd like to think about that.
This is Jerry and Esther. Would you please light a candle of concern for our daughter who's going through some really tough times right now?
Hi, I'm Amy. We're going to be celebrating a birthday this week. Caleb turns 10 on Friday. Thank you. Candle of joy.
Our first reading today is Technological Wisdom, which is excerpted from a Tycoon magazine. The author is Alan Kanner, a Berkeley, California child, family, and adult psychologist. Human beings are destined to mold the earth, gifted with exquisite hands, passionate imaginations, and boundless curiosity about how things work. We need to tinker, prod, poke, and build. It is in our genes and our souls to engage so completely with our physical surroundings that we alter them, just as the abundant fertility of the planet could not help but produce us. Indeed, our propensity to construct and redo may be a flamboyant expression of the generativity of our evolving world, which in its 4.5 billion year history has never ceased to cast itself anew. To be against technology is to deny a crucial part of human nature. Today, however, it has become extremely difficult to fully appreciate or ponder our ability to make things. Instead, we are caught in a tragically flawed philosophy called technological progress that blinds us to the numerous choices we have, the various ways open to us to become both wise and creative technological beings. It is as if we have decided that the only proper use of our legs is to run, and run as hard as we can at every possible moment. As an eco-psychologist, I am interested in the personal relationships we have with the natural and built worlds and how these relationships interact. Our many inventions and devices are not only altering the face of the planet, but also radically changing our connection to nature, to each other, and to ourselves. These are profound changes worthy of our most serious attention. Yet at present, there is no psychology of technology, if by this we mean a systematic examination of the myriad influences of each innovation on our psyches, our relationships, our identities. This is a curious state of affairs, especially since psychology has turned its magnifying glass onto so many other aspects of our lives. But my profession itself caught up in the sweep of technological progress and assumes that each advancement is ultimately positive, inevitable, or both. An alternative view, and one that ushers in the full psychological complexity of technology, conceives of our capacity to mold the earth as engaging in a two-way relationship. As we enter into this relationship, we will be transformed. In this act of transformation, certain questions emerge. What happens to us and the world when we do not try to build it up as fast as possible? What happens when we do? Is there such a thing as technological walking, skipping, strolling, and meandering, as well as running? And how do our experience and treatment of ourselves and surroundings differ in each of these molds? Honoring the mutual influence between humans and their creations involves far more than the necessary
to sustainable or appropriate technology. It requires a shift from the technological progress to technological wisdom. Here ends the first reading. At this time, please join in a few moments of silent thought, meditation, or the spirit of prayer. Please rise in body and spirit and join together in the sanctuary hymn, which is number 402 in the gray hymn. Karen will play through it one time and then it's short, so we're going to sing through it three times. Today is from commondreams.org, and it was published on Sunday, September 7th, 2014, a couple of weeks before World Peace Day, which was last Sunday. It's called We Need Technology for World Peace, Not World Destruction, by Jacob Devaney. Fire is technology. We can use it to warm our food and our home or to burn down our neighborhood. It's all a matter of how we choose to use or abuse resources. Pentagon recently agreed to honor contracts with a lifetime cost of roughly $1.5 trillion for the F-35 Lightning Joint Strike Fighter program, despite numerous technical concerns, for the purpose of destroying or dominating our enemies du jour and the planet and our economy alongside them. At the same time, and for a fraction of that amount, a civilian digital technology recently launched with the purpose of connecting people around the world for the sake of creating and nurturing peace. The Global Peace Map. The Global Peace Map, powered by UNIFI in collaboration with many other organizations and individuals, is an embeddable platform that connects peacemakers and positive peace, that is, unarmed and nonviolent events, around the world. The map automatically adjusts to time zone and allows you to zoom and scroll across the planet to see all the different places in which people are calling or demonstrating for peace in our war-weary world. This emergent technology has been created through the contributions of intelligence and funds from many peace organizations and individuals. Anyone with internet access is empowered to populate the map by creating a local event for the International Day of Peace, September 21st, 2014. This globally crowdsourced, unified, and interactive tool for peace is unprecedented technology designed and used for good constructive change and expressing the growing will of civil society everywhere for peace. The United Nations declared the theme of this year's International Day of Peace as the right of peoples to peace. The UN has recognized that peace is a prerequisite of realizing human rights around the world, and it is within our potential as human beings to build positive peace. The global map is one way technology is helping us harness this potential. Social media is as well. Participants of local events on September 21st are also encouraged to take pictures, share them to social media networks. There's a Facebook event page for globally synchronized meditation with already more than 20,000 participants. If you were reading this online, or you are, as he said in his post, then you are engaging with some of the most complex technology in the history of the planet, the internet. You are literally reading light as it is interpreted through complex networks and computer chips to relay ideas and feelings around the world. All of the technology in the world of humans was born from within us and is a reflection of our potential. Will we use it as the fire to keep us warm, or will we let it burn down all that we cherish in this life? Here ends the second reading.
You know, if you think back historically, men and women were outside. We were first hunters and gatherers and farmers for centuries and centuries. But now we spend a lot more time indoors. So my prediction for the future is that through evolution, just like Tony and I, human beings will no longer need hair. The cheetah is faster. The elephant is larger and stronger. The eagle can fly for hours. But what has caused humans to dominate every other species? Science and technology. 200 years ago, no human was traveling faster than the cheetah. No human was able to destroy what an elephant could. No human was able to fly higher than the birds. Technology continues to advance at a faster and faster pace. But still, it takes time for technology to become commercially viable and affordable for the masses. Because of that time, it causes doubt. We'll never find a solution to that. And things that happen today, many people said would never happen. Communicate instantly with someone around the world on Skype. Travel astonishing distances in a plane or a car. In a climate-controlled, video-equipped cars or planes. Or taking video and pictures in other galaxies. So let's take a little trip back in time. Everybody says they want to go back to the good old days. Let's go back 200 years ago to the 1814. While it's true the U.S. Postal Service had been invented in 1775, most people still relied on verbal communication, word of mouth. And even though the telegraph had been invented in 1792, it would still be 45 more years into the 1830s. Before commercial widespread use was to occur. Transportation, mostly by foot or horse. Even though the first steam-powered automobile had been invented 45 years earlier, in 1769, not one person was driving one. It would be a few more years into the 1830s before the steam locomotive would see significant commercial use. I'm going to be talking about three areas when I go back in time. Communication, transportation, and medicine. At this time, medicine, the common theory of disease transmission, wasn't germs, it was the miasma theory. That diseases such as cholera, chlamydia, or black death were caused by miasma, a noxious form of bad air emanating from rotting organic matter. It would take until much later in the 19th century before germ theory would take hold. Let's travel 50 years forward to 1864. The U.S. was in a bloody civil war. It would still be 12 more years until 1876 when Alexander Graham Bell would receive his patent for the electric telephone. So, snail mail, oral communication, still the dominant mode. Transportation, almost no one was still driving an automobile. Even though some of the wealthy were riding trains, it would still be 5 more years before the Transcontinental Railroad was to be completed. In medicine, let's say you've been shot in the leg in the Civil War. Typically, by the time you found a rare doctor, you had gangrene. So what was the solution? Amputation. For anesthesia, a shot of whiskey. Next, let's travel forward 100 years to 1964. Some of us were alive. The telephone was now wildly popular. We all hated dialing a phone number that had a lot of zeros. And some people still had party lines, where your neighbors could listen in and find out exactly what your teenager did last night. Believe it or not, the last party lines were not disabled until 1991. The automobile was now the dominant mode of transportation, but autos were primitive. The poor tires and suspensions, terrible emissions, much required maintenance, and almost non-existent safety features compared to today. The modern interstate system was just getting started. Some could afford to fly on an airplane. And even though arthroscopic surgery had been invented, it wouldn't take until the 1970s and the 80s, with the invention of flexible fiber optics, that the practice would truly become common. Today, if you think about it, we can combine all those areas, communications, transportation, and medicine in ways not possible. Imagine a car accident. A police officer on the scene uses his cell phone to muster in a helicopter to med flight that deceased person off to provide a vital organ to save someone else's life in a matter of hours.
And that's where we're at today. And the future promises to be even more extraordinary. But before I get to that, I want to address how science, technology, and the future tie into what Mark and I are doing here today in a church, and how it connects with many of your spirituality. Here's a quote from the late, great Carl Sagan. Science is not only compatible with spirituality, it is a profound source of spirituality. When we recognize our place in an immensity of light years and in the passage of ages, when we grasp the intricacy, the beauty, the subtlety of life, then that soaring feeling, that sense of elation and humility combined, is surely spiritual. And I think of it that way, but I don't agree with everything. Carl was not an atheist. I am. So I have a problem with spirituality, at least when you say it's a belief in a supernatural being. I don't believe that's possible until I see evidence. Science. I'll remain an atheist. But I like the quote because Carl Sagan, very much like Albert Einstein, also had a problem defining spirituality as a higher being or a personal God. But they still had that sense of awe-inspiringness that they liked to use the word spiritual for. Having read many of each of these great scientists' works, I'd say they both thought of spirituality as a nature or a deep, awe-inspiring understanding of nature. Of course, I can't definitely say that that's how they define spirituality, but I can say with complete conviction that the most deeply awe-inspiring thing that I believe is science. I see hope for humanity and for the future in the advancement of science and technology. And now that I've shared that, let me allow myself to make a bold prediction. I predict the future is going to be amazing. In addition, it's going to be incredible, marvelous, extraordinary, fantastic, and awesome. Let's talk about robotics first. Robots have many capabilities that already can exceed what any human can do. Of course, computational skills, strength, sight, longevity. And not far behind is their sense of smell. I recently watched a video where a robot was bouncing a ping pong ball so fast and adjusting for corrections, you couldn't even see the ping pong ball moving. It's just incredible. I saw another video where they're trying to knock a robot over, and its balance was so good it could correct itself and not be knocked over. It's amazing. Robots will continue to be put to work making things easier for us. The tasks that are hard for us now are continually going to be easier. I have a question. How many people in the audience are wearing a wrist monitor? Is there anybody wearing a wrist monitor? Well, I've been noticing some of my friends starting to wear wrist monitors, and it's quite amazing. Another technology that you can tell your blood pressure, sleep, it tells you about your exercise activities, glucose levels. In the future, thin skin patches will not only do all that, but monitor brain activities, muscle tremors, and administer medications when needed. I know future predictions are always promising that things will get better, but the real question is, how much time before they actually happen? Well, let me share this one scenario with you. In 1964, the average worker made $2.50 an hour. In 2010, the average worker made $20.40 an hour. Now, for each of those same people to do 152 hours of work comes out to $380 for the 1964 individual. That person could find an ad that shows that for $380, you could get a stereo system, turntable, two speakers, and a receiver. That's what it took, 152 hours, almost a month of work for me to get there. Today, technology and science advancement, that 152 hours nets us $3,100, where you can buy a home theater, a 50-inch HD TV, iPod, a Garmin, GPS, Canon 16-megapixel camera, a laptop, a printer, a smartphone, and still have $600 left over to party.
Some say that global warming will be our biggest crisis. And while I agree, it could be a very serious crisis, we have another huge problem as we move into the future. How to feed 9, 10, 12, 15 billion people. In the past, the domestication of animals and the mechanization of the farm have allowed us to feed our current 7.2 billion people. Well, almost feed our planet. Because sadly, 40,000 children die every single day of starvation. Think about that, 40,000 children. regardless of whether it's organic or not, technology will be key to our future agriculture. Today, modern farming equipment uses GPS-coordinated satellite imagery to predict moisture, fertilizer, and pesticide needs. And the machinery tailors that distribution not to waste a drop. In the future, drones will allow an easy way for farmers to see their huge farm. Every single part of it will be able to detect the status of their crops without walking it or driving on it. And while we might be able to explain some farmland, that is not the primary solution. It is increased yields through technology on our existing farmlands that will help us feed the world's ever-growing population.
And this possible future is only possible, I believe, with renewable energy as its primary source of energy. We all know that no matter how many fossil fuels are on the planet, in the ground, we still can't expect them to last forever. I think we need to look up to our energy provider, the sun, and start using it. Right now, the combined energy of the whole world, the sun sheds on us, the combined energy in 1 year, by the way, the sun sheds on us in 1.5 hours. That's an incredible stat. That's about 1/5,000th of the energy that we use collectively on this planet, the sun is giving us. So we need to tap into something that's really there, the energy of the sun. Because all we need to do is double it with solar panels, and we can start really taking off. Of course, we got some technology issues to deal with, but we're getting better and better all the time. So, we can start by putting solar panels on every roof, everywhere. We can start using our roads as solar panel collectors and using the friction provided through us driving on our roads. After that, we can start covering our parking lots. We can start covering deserts and mountains and whatever's needed. We can do this.
Energy will be used for computers. They're doing more and more all the time. Recently, a supercomputer read 100,000 research papers, and checking symptoms actually predicted new health issues in several patients. You've all heard about cars using computers to drive themselves as some future activity. This is targeted for commercial production in the year 2020, 6 years away. You probably heard of 3D printing, where we actually can create objects from a printer. But that's taken on a whole new meaning just recently, where they were able to 3D print half of a man's skull. Or more amazingly, we just printed, 3D printed our first drivable electric car. Speaking of cars, in 1908, Henry Ford introduced the Model T. In 1909, that price was $850. By 1924, the price was down to $290. Similarly, in the 80s, you could easily spend $3,000 for a PC. Now you can get a PC, real-time access to the internet almost anywhere on the planet, a phone, an answering machine, a camera, a video recorder, and a Sony Walkman, for well under $300 that fits in the palm of your hand. Computers are going to keep going down in cost. In the 1950s, what would have been the world's most smartest supercomputer, the countries would have fought a war over, is now sold for a few dollars in a birthday card that we throw away. Computers will soon cost pennies and be everywhere. We have computers in our bodies monitoring our vital signs and alerting us and medical authorities before a heart attack, before a stroke, helping to regulate our brain patterns if we have Alzheimer's or we suffer from mental illness. We will have electronic lawyers and doctors projected on our living room walls to give us advice. Computers will run artificial hearts and lungs and other organs.
But I have no hope for a future without science. Can anyone imagine a future without science? It's hard to even imagine. For that reason, I think it's important for us to address where we get the truth, something we're all familiar with, we're all seeking, we all want the truth. What I think is the truth, my understanding of the truth, comes from the scientific method. I know the audience here is quite scientifically literate, so you know the scientific method. You ask a question, you research, gather the evidence, construct a hypothesis, test, retest, analyze with peers, and then you communicate your results. But I don't think you've heard it like I'm going to explain it here right now. So it's an original. We are seeking the truth. As a matter of fact, everything that we say, we think is the truth. If you don't think what you're saying is the truth, then why are you saying it? This is why I love science so much. Because the scientific method provides us with the best answer for the truth that we have ever thought of. You see, when you say something, you're making a claim. You're trying to tell the truth. And you've done as best you can by figuring things out in your head. You say something, but only 400 years ago, approximately, we came up with something better. We started to say, wait, you know, anybody can say anything that way. Yeah, they're saying the truth, and then there's lies out there. Or, you know, worse almost, is someone telling with conviction what they think they know, and yet they're telling falsehoods. A lie can be so destructive to the truth. It's almost like the carpenters that built this building, and then somebody destroys it. It took so much time, you see, to make this building. And then it's gone, just like that. You see, if you're not telling the truth as best you can, if you don't understand the truth even, and you start to tell whatever you think or whatever you believe to everybody you want, you see, that undermines, that takes 2x4s out of the building of the truth. And people start to not know exactly what the truth is. You see, the scientific method starts by asking a question, gathers as much evidence as it can. Then it analyzes its data, it tests it. And then on the bottom, when they're all done and they finally figured everything out, they have built this huge building of what they think is the truth. And now, out of their mouth comes what they think is the truth. See where I'm going with that? That scientific method is so strong because they do so much work before they allow themselves to speak. I'm not saying everybody's perfect. There are scientists out there all the time that start to jump the gun or put out a little too fast, you know, too excited, and including myself, we all tend to exaggerate sometimes, you know, but that undermines the truth too. So I have a future in mind with science that is a real honest future. That's something as spiritual individuals That's something we all want. We want honesty. We want the truth. That's where we're going to go in the future with more science and technology.
We obviously haven't achieved world peace yet. But the reality is, we are now less likely to die from a physically violent death than ever before in history. That may seem hard to believe, but there's a lot of evidence for it. It's happening for a variety of reasons. One of them is that we're more intelligent than our ancestors. We continue to get smarter with military technology, with medical technology, and even the fact that there are more democracies today. And this has actually been a steady trend for centuries. And even a lot of the technologies we use today have come about because of military reasons. Now, I'm quite a big pacifist, but it just provides us a source of technology. Some of you know my daughter, Maria. An interesting fact about her that I thought about the other day before she got married was that before she was 27 years old, she had lived, not traveled to, lived on 5 of the 7 continents. Think of all the young people you know, the people in this congregation, who traveled and lived globally, extensively. They have such a much better understanding of other cultures. I think about that generation growing up. We'll have so much tendency towards world peace as we understand cultures better. Obviously, we'll have to continue diplomacy to help this cause, especially with that ever-increasing population.
It's always fun to imagine what the distant future will be like. My future in the next 500 to 1,000 years is so incredible. I imagine huge fisheries, like the Mediterranean Sea, is a fishery with billions of fish in it. Maybe the Gulf of Mexico also. I see gigantic cities built over large lakes. We can travel any place on Earth in less than an hour. We capture and use so much energy that we now control the weather to our advantage. Robots not only do almost all of our work for us, but we are in large part robotic ourselves and loving our many hundred years lifespan because of it. And just maybe after all that, we finally come up with the idea for the 3-day weekend.
So as complex as all this sounds, our message is really simple. Technology is going to continue. We won't be able to stop it. We can't turn back the clock. Obviously, with technology comes many, many ethical issues. How long do we live beyond quality of life is one. And there will always be a minority that will want to misuse technology. But I believe in the goodness of human beings and that we will manage technology and channel it in such a way that it will continue to improve our lives and continue to solve some of the world's biggest problems.
History lesson number one. There's not a thing that can't be done. Somewhere in this world of doubt, someone's gonna work it out. Now there you go, there you go, just like that. We learned to crawl, we learned to walk, we learned to fly at Kitty Hawk. Next thing you know, one afternoon, we're driving golf balls on the behind our borderline and talk about it all the time. History lesson number two is not what you say, but what you do. Now there you go, there you go, just like that. Yeah, we try to find peace through war, although it's never worked before. If we want peace, we got to start to heal the hurt in every heart. Yeah, there you go, there you go, just like that. Yeah, there you go, there you go, just like that.
As we leave this sacred place, may we carry forth the light of our chalice, now extinguished here. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your minds. Please rise in body or spirit and join in the final hymn, number 348, Guide My Feet. Which is worthy of repeating, speak with a clear voice. That which is worthy of remembering, hold in your hearts. And that which is worthy of living, go and live it now.
soon on board the ship with our hearts. That'd be good.